All right.
What's going on, man? How's your week been?
I have been real good. My wife just left on vacation. She's going to her 30-year middle school reunion.
Middle school reunion? I don't think I've ever been to a school reunion at all, but let alone middle school.
Well, in China, it's really weird. They have so up until middle school, the kids are all pretty much together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of start branching off into their specialized schools. And China's like, it's not like here, you just go to the high school that's closest to you or in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Or in your district. Over there, they go to high school based on their grades from middle school. So they've got high schools for the smarter kids, high schools for the low achievers, and so on.
I feel like I would have been in that low achiever school.
Well, that's what my wife said. She said we were talking about it the other day, and she was like, man, all my friends from middle school, they were like low achievers. They went to the bad high schools, the quote unquote bad high schools, and you know, all of them are successful today.
Yeah. I didn't do very well in school. I wonder if that's a thing for small business guys and entrepreneurs, if a lot of them didn't do so hot.
Maybe it's one of those things where it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because if you're a low achiever and then you don't go to college, for example, then you're kind of forced into something, right? So you're either forced into a path of so-called servitude or a path of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, this week's been kind of tough for me. We're dealing with extension deadlines. I'm dealing with some hardcore burnout. I did not want to be here today. I mean, this is fun. I'm happy to do the podcast, but I do not want to sit in my office anymore. The weather's nice. I should be playing golf.
Is there any possibility to get like temporary help?
It's not that I actually need the help. I don't have so much work that I can't handle it. It's just I'm procrastinating and I don't want to do it.
Well, you know, cocaine's a time monitor.
Is that? I guess that's how they got it done in the 80s. Yeah. Is that what I should be doing?
You know, there's a. I read a thing in Reason magazine probably 20 years ago or so that the essay or the article postulated that a majority of the world's great discoveries and inventions were probably fueled by drugs.
Yeah, I bet that's correct.
There was a
see some new designs on an acid trip or something.
Yeah, well, there was a part of the story, as I remember it, was there was a famous mathematician that was open about using stimulants, you know, like Adderall or something like that, or maybe it was heroin. I don't even know what it was, but it was something hardcore.
Yeah,
and whenever he would have his discussions with his colleagues about it, he would say, yeah, I think better. I think more clearly, you know? And his colleagues said, made a bet with him. And he said, you're just addicted. He said, I'll bet you that you can't quit that drug for a month. Right. And the other guy accepted the bet, quit the drug for a month. And then his friend says, okay, how do you feel? And he says, I feel like shit. And mathematics has been set back by a month.
Well, there you go. I don't think Turtle Smith is condoning drug use, but
we're not condoning drug use.
Maybe if you're a crazy mathematician,
we're not going to be like the turtle that keeps its head in the shell and doesn't acknowledge that it is part of life. So, you know,
I'm Scott Hess, tax and business consultant.
I'm John Barton, small business owner. Remember the tortoise and the hare? Slow and steady wins the race.
We started Turtle Smith to help people start small businesses, providing information and resources to small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Build a solid foundation and forge your dreams.
Well, this week we're talking about employment, which is the next step in phase two of your kind of how to start a business that we're doing. And it's all about understanding kind of just general employment terms and kind of understanding how it all works. So the first thing we'll talk about is employees versus independent contractors. And that is a big hot button issue right now, particularly with the IRS. They're cracking down hard on people who are on small businesses who are paying as independent contractors when really you should be paying them as employees. And the reason that some small businesses choose to try to get everybody on independent contractor is it does save in payroll taxes. You don't have to do the matching FICA taxes, you don't have to pay unemployment taxes. So it's possible, depending on what state you are and what the unemployment rules are, can save you anywhere from about 7.5% to 10% in taxes. But if you falsely pay somebody 1099 or independent contractor when they're supposed to be an employee, you can get in a lot of trouble, a lot of penalties, a lot of interest, and it really is a bad deal. So
it's also detrimental to the employee, because a lot of times you'll negotiate an amount with somebody and try to pay them as a contractor, and that person will not be aware that they need to file taxes.
Correct. Yeah, it costs them more taxes too, because they have to pay all that self-employment tax. So yeah, real hassle. The IRS defines kind of three different categories to determine whether people are employees versus an independent contractor. The first is behavioral. Does the company control or have the right to control what the worker does or how the worker does his job? So if you have somebody that, you know, needs to show up from 9 to 5, you're telling them what to do, or they, you know, perform a function that is controlled by you, that's an employee. If they're working on their own, they show up on their own time, they work by the job, you know, you kind of just have them do piecemeal work, or they get paid, you know, for everything that they finish, that's more of an independent contractor. The next one's financial, and that is the business aspects for the worker's job controlled by the payer, which basically just means, are you giving them all of the necessary tools and supplies as the employer, or do they bring their own? So subcontractors that come out and work, you know, on your house, they bring all their own tools. They'll often bring all the supplies. That's an independent contractor. Somebody who you're providing computer, software, everything that they need to do their job, that would be an employee.
But that doesn't always mean it, right? Like, you can have your computer, for example, and a bookkeeper shows up and does your books.
Correct. But that's exactly right. So these, you kind of have to really judge all of these factors to determine whether they're going to be an independent contractor or an employee. The last one is sort of the type of relationship, written contract. Do they have benefits with you? Are they short-term versus long-term? These are kind of categories to define employees versus independent contractors. But really what it comes down to is the amount of control that you have over the worker. If you have a lot of control over what they do, how they do it, when they do it, then that's an employee. If you don't have so much control, it's just you got to get this job done and they kind of do it on their own, that is an independent contractor.
Now, I think a lot of small business owners probably don't even really realize the difference here.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if someone hires someone as an independent contractor and then at some point they realize, hey, you know, I really need to have this person on the payroll. I need to have a payroll.
Well, if you as the employer realize that you made a mistake and that you really need to be paying as an employee rather than a contractor, you should really get with an accountant at that point, because you're kind of in some deep water already. They'll be able to help you out. Find a tax professional or a CPA or whoever in your local area, and they can kind of sort it all out for you.
So can a person hire someone as an independent contractor and then turn them into an employee?
That's often happens. If you have somebody kind of on a short-term contract, they're doing something very specific, they're getting paid like per the job, you end up liking them and you want to bring them on full-time. That switch happens from time to time.
Now, what happens when you hire a temp agency, someone from a temp agency?
So that's a completely different thing. That's called an employee leasing company. The temp agency actually pays the worker, you pay the temp agency. So it's completely out of your hands.
So the tax situation is taken care of. Mm-hmm. That's all legal. You don't have to worry about it. But that is a situation where you can hire someone as a sort of an independent contractor where you don't have to put them on the payroll, but you could dictate to them that they have to be there from 9 to 5.
Yeah. Now, if you need seasonal help or just part-time help, or like you don't necessarily need help every day, like maybe once a week you need somebody to come in, a staffing agency or an employee leasing company, great option.
Is this mostly a thing for the IRS that they just really care about that people are classified correctly and the correct taxes are paid?
Correct. They want to make sure that the employee is having the correct taxes withheld from their paycheck and that the employer is paying their share, which we'll get into that a little later, kind of what the different taxes are for an employee. But they just want to get paid. The IRS does. And so if everything's working out, you probably won't ever hear from them. But the second something doesn't get paid or one of your employees doesn't pay their taxes, then you can get in some trouble. Now, you can't get in trouble for the employee not paying their taxes. But if they feel that they were an employee So if you're an employee and you're getting 1099 or independent contractor, and you feel that that's a mistake, you can file the form SS8 with the IRS, and that's a reclassification of your work status. It reclassifies you from an independent contractor to an employee. And then if you, as a company owner, if one of your workers does this and the IRS agrees with them, that's a big issue. That's a bankruptable event for small businesses.
Really?
Yeah, it's horrible. You have to pay all of the taxes for that employee. So you have to catch them up on the full FICA taxes. You have to basically take what they were paid and round up all of the taxes that they were to pay. And you have to just pay out of pocket for
like 100% of it, or 100% is it half?
100%
of it. So the fine, it's basically a penalty of 100%.
And then there's interest and penalties for not filing the 941s and all the tax forms and paying the taxes. We've seen it happen a couple times. I think we've had three companies in the last about 4 or 5 years who've had a situation like this. Two went out of business very quickly.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So if you have an employee, pay them as an employee. Don't try to cheat and pay them as a contract laborer. You're going to be much better in the long run.
That's one of the heaviest penalties that I think we've discussed about not doing things the right way.
That's a real bad one. Yeah, you want to make sure that if you have an employee and they're classified as an employee, that you're paying them properly.
All right. So when I was in Germany, we had a saying that's called "Don't save on the wrong end."
Yeah.
This would be an example of trying to save on the wrong end that can really hit you heavily on the back end.
Yeah, and it doesn't even save you that much. It does save a little bit, but it's not like a huge amount that really everybody should be trying to cheat. You know, this is, if you're their employees, just pay them like an employee. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is sort of hourly versus salary and what the difference is. And also some of the new overtime rules. So hourly person, it's pretty simple. You know, everybody's worked a job probably that's listening. You just get paid X amount of dollars per hour. A salaried employee gets a total compensation for the week, regardless of how many hours they work, is that's kind of how it's supposed to be. But there's two sort of rules for salaried people, or one rule for salaried people and then one rule for hourly that you kind of have to pay attention to. That the hourly rule is, the new overtime rule is, anything over 40 hours in a week, you have to pay overtime. So it used to be kind of by the pay period is how a lot of people used to do it. Now it's by the week. So if I work 42 hours 1 week and 38 the next week, that's 80 on my 2 week paycheck.
But I
get 2 hours of overtime now.
Ooh, and that's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times people would just pay, you know, based on the total hours, you know, however many days are in the pay period times 8. And then you would judge whether they had overtime that way. The salary rule is, you have to pay attention to what's called the white collar exemption limit. If you try to pay somebody salary under this exemption limit, they still are entitled to overtime. So I think it's like 55 or maybe 57,000. We'll put the right number up on the website for sure. But it changes every year. It goes up a little bit. But if you pay under that amount, like say you pay $40,000 a year in salary, if somebody works overtime, they still get overtime at their general hourly rate.
But if they make over 57,000 or whatever the number actually is, then it means they can work 160 hours a month and not get overtime?
Correct. Yeah. Well, however many, you know, 40 hours a week, 45, 50 hours a week, yeah, you don't have to pay them overtime. Yeah. So those are kind of the rules versus the hourly and salary that you need to pay attention to. So a lot of employers offer benefits. Most small businesses are not required to offer anything. Health insurance, you're supposed to offer if you have more than 50 employees. You have to have some kind of qualified health plan. But and then the other benefits are, you know, 401k and vision and dental, pensions, you know, things like that. For a small business, benefits are really just about keeping good employees. So depending on what kind of business you're running, you probably don't have to worry about benefits, especially at the beginning. But as you kind of grow and get more employees, having benefits retains your employees. Having a great health plan or health insurance plan really keeps a lot of your great employees with you, because they don't want to go have to pay for insurance or jump ship.
Back in phase one, you know, when we were talking about planning,
yeah,
and especially as we got into the financials, I don't recall that we really talked too much about the cost of these things.
No, we did not. And so during phase two, you should probably go back to phase one and retool your business plan if you want to offer these things. But mostly for a small business just starting out, they don't need to worry about this. This is more for like as you're starting to grow and scale, you need to pay attention to these type of deals.
But I'm going to kind of push back on that a little bit. I kind of think that it's worth it to put that in as a conservative estimate and see if you can be competitive if you paid benefits. You might opt not to pay benefits. So that would then just be a profit center, you know, if you were able to, but you didn't. But if you were able to, then you definitely could, and you wouldn't have to worry about it severely affecting your ability to stay in business.
The majority of small businesses, you know, under 5 employees do not have any benefits. And for example, my company only very recently had health insurance. For the first 4 or 5 years I was in business, I didn't even have health insurance. You know, I tried to get on some marketplace stuff. I was on for a little while and then would get kicked off. And, you know, it's just, it's tough to keep benefits early. And so it's my opinion that if you're starting a business, that the thought process between you on your benefits is really a down the road type of deal. Once you start getting steady, you have income, you have revenue, that's when you pay attention to those kind of things. Unless you're some type of like professional organization, if you're starting a law firm, typically you have to have benefits to get great employees.
Yeah, all I meant was just, you know, throw it in the calculations and mm-hmm. see where you're at.
Yeah, 100%. So again, you don't have to offer anything if you don't want to. You're not required unless you have a certain number of employees for health insurance. But they are a great way to keep, you know, people on your team so for a long time. The next thing we'll talk about is kind of raises. Now, it's been proven by several studies that if you jump jobs every 2 to 3 years as an employee, you will end up with a much higher salary than if you stayed at one job for a long time. So typically when you jump ship, there's a pretty decent increase in your salary. You know, a lot of times you'll hear people getting 15 or 20% raises when they switch companies. A typical business will only give, you know, 5-7% raises a year. And so it doesn't work out very well as an employee if you try to stay with the company for a long time, particularly because we have seen a reduction in pensions and things like that going away.
So this is kind of on a tangent, but has anybody done any studies about like how much raises contribute to inflation, for example? Because that seems to me to be a point where companies would have to raise their prices as they're paying more. If they're being more competitive, and if you're jumping ship and you're going to a competitor but doing the same job, then presumably that competitor can afford to pay whatever ends up being the increased compensation.
I suppose.
So they would have to charge accordingly, you know, possibly, unless they have, you know, some much lower cost in some way to offset it, right? So in order to stay competitive, then a company would need to either offer raises or be looking for employees that they're going to offer more money to, right?
I mean, if you want to keep your key employees, you're going to have to offer really competitive raises. So I typically do 10% a year, roughly, and that seems to keep everybody happy right now. But I know for a fact that, like the attorney that works for me, she could go work somewhere else for probably a 50% raise if she really wanted to. But I offer her benefits in other ways, you know, lots of days off and things like that. So it's a little bit better of a working environment for her. That's why she sticks around. But if I was on, you know, when we have quite a few employees, as we grow this business, we're hiring more people, we're going to have to be real competitive in raises. Otherwise, we'll just have people leaving. You know, they'll come here, they'll get a bunch of training, they'll get a bunch of experience, and then they'll take it somewhere else.
So that would have to be part of our, you know, business planning then, mm-hmm. right? We would have to have some sort of a plan for increasing our revenue year on year.
Well, revenue should increase, as should your profit margins as you're building your business. But you have to take into account some of those raises as you're doing your kind of year-to-year projections and your scaling models that we'll work on later. You have to pay attention to what the salaries are going to be 10 years from now. You know, people are going to be making a lot more money that work for us now in 10 years.
Right.
So Okay, now we're going to kind of get into the boring stuff again. We talked about accounting a bunch last time. Now we're going to talk about payroll taxes and the reports. So every quarter, you have to be submitting your federal payroll reports. And then most states are also quarterly. Some states require monthly. And then you have to pay your taxes sometimes at a different rate. So we're going to talk about the taxes that are withheld and when you have to pay those. So the federal taxes consist of federal income tax that you're withholding from your employees, and then the FICA taxes. FICA taxes are Social Security and Medicare. Social Security is 6.2% withheld from the employee's check and 1.45% for Medicare. As the employer, you have to match that amount. So it just comes right off out of your pocket to match that. It's not withheld from them. So the total that's getting paid in is 15.3%, which is the self-employment tax that hits small business owners and independent contractors. So every quarter, you have to file Form 941, which shows how much wages you paid and how much was withheld for federal income tax and how much was withheld for FICA, and make sure the math all works out. And then you file that form. There are a couple different pay schedules for the federal taxes. You can be a quarterly filer if you have like less than $1,000 that you owe. If you have less than $2,500 in total FICA total 941 taxes at the end of the quarter, you can pay once a month. And if you have more than that, you have to be what's called a semi-weekly depositor, which means you have to pay every time you do payroll. So every 2 weeks when you do payroll, you have to pay the taxes ahead of time before you submit the form each time you do payroll. The next taxes that are withheld are state taxes. So they're state income taxes in those states that have income tax. Oklahoma has it. Texas doesn't have income tax, so nothing's withheld there. And then some states have state unemployment insurance. We pay ours to the Oklahoma Employment Security Commission. There's like the Texas workforce. And then those can either be fully paid by the company in most states, like in Oklahoma, we it's fully paid by the company. In other states, some of it can be withheld from the employee. So you have to kind of check your state laws on the unemployment to figure out whether you owe or it's withheld from the employee's check. And then the last thing to talk about for payroll taxes is the federal unemployment, which is Form 940. That's just filed once at the end of the year. It's either 0.6 or 6%, depending on whether there's a state unemployment plan. And it's capped at like the first 7,000 of payroll. So for at 0.6%, you never pay more than $42 an employee, but it kind of is what it is.
Where does that, what does that money go for?
It's for the federal unemployment insurance. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't know.
Like how does one apply for federal unemployment?
Yeah, you just get state unemployment here. I think it's supposed to go to like creating jobs and helping people get out of unemployment. But really, it's just another tax that you have to pay. So the common forms that you have to deal with are the 941, which is the quarterly federal taxes. There's also a form 944 if you have less than $1,000 per year. Like if you just have like one small employee that gets paid part-time, you can do that. Instead of doing the 941 quarterly, you do it a yearly 944. And then there's the form 940, which is federal withholding, and then the state forms. And you need to get a W-4 from all your employees. That's what shows what to withhold and all that. And then you give them at the end of the year a W-2.
All these numbers, you know, as I'm looking at this form 941, 944, 940, all I see is like Porsche numbers.
Yeah.
I think that's how much my eyes glaze over with paperwork. So I'm very glad to have you doing this.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there are payroll companies and payroll software that you can use. You should not be trying to do this all by hand. You should just know what the forms are and kind of generally what you're required to do as an employer. The payroll software is QuickBooks, QuickBooks Online, QuickBooks Desktop. And there's also a ton of other payroll softwares out there that just do payroll and not accounting.
I used one of those for a while, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a pain in the butt sometimes if you get behind or they send you a form or something like that, so you have to fill this out. And
yeah.
Yeah. So
The payroll software, though, basically, once you get it set up, which is kind of a bear to get set up initially, but if you get QuickBooks all set up, you just enter in their hours and then they're paid very easily. You can even set it up for direct deposit, so you don't even have to print checks. That's a real, makes it real easy to do payroll. But there are also payroll companies that you can pay to just do it all for you. So Paycom is a big one here in Oklahoma.
Paycom Center, right?
Yeah, so. Big one in Oklahoma. There's Paychex. There's a handful of other ones that I can't remember off the top of my head. But basically, they'll have all the HR and payroll software and everything ready to go for you. You just kind of log into a portal and you submit your employees' hours and they take care of everything. So they can even have deals with that clock in and clock out and then do the paychecks automatically. So you don't even have to worry about it. It's definitely a great option to have a payroll company, but it can be a little bit costly.
So I'll tell you this, you know, just the first year that I had Chester's, you know, I feel like I got a little bit robbed on the overtime stuff, you know.
Definitely.
And that was all just because I wasn't paying attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just kind of being lax and letting people do it. So this is something I believe that, you know, it's really important to pay attention to, especially if you're paying hourly.
Absolutely. Yeah, you definitely want to pay attention. And you should just know generally, again, what these forms are, what they're used for, and why you have to deal with them. But you don't have to know how to do a 941 form. The software takes care of it mostly. The next thing we're going to talk about is sort of key employees. So as your business grows, you're going to have to start delegating some more important tasks, and you're going to have to hire people or promote people from within that are sort of key employees. And these people become very important to your mental well-being, pretty much. You know, they take over a lot of the stress, a lot of the responsibilities. And if you have somebody like that in your company, you have to take care of them, because the bottom line is if they become unhappy, best case, they go work for a competitor. Worst case, you've created a competitor. They're going to go out and start their own business just like yours because they know how to do it.
So I think for employers, though, you know, there's a fine line, you know, between keeping someone happy and feeling extorted.
100%. Yeah. You don't ever want to pay somebody so much that you know, it's you're not making any money. Although that will happen at the beginning of your small business. You may pay your employees more than you're making. But as you grow and you get bigger, yeah, you don't want to be extorted by your key employees. That's true.
So might it be better to plan and try to create a culture where there aren't any key employees, where everybody can do most of the tasks and you're not dependent on one person? Because the way Lulu is my key employee, right? Mm-hmm. So if something happens to her, we're going to be hurting quite a bit, because even if I found somebody who speaks Chinese, they're going to be ignorant of all the things that she knows.
So that's a very great point and very idealistic and something that you really should strive for. Very, very difficult to actually accomplish. When you're running a small business like this, you know, like we have with less than 5 or 10 people, somebody steps into a role. It's impossible to pay enough people to cross-train on everything. It's very difficult. Big corporations, if you're working as a cog in the machine and you leave, they're probably not even going to notice. But as a small business, if you have 5 people, if one guy leaves, you're going to be really up the creek. So when you do have these key employees that are coming up, you'll identify them. You know, they'll start taking over more of your work as your time is stretched thinner and thinner. You just have to keep them happy. And so there's a couple different things that you can do: raises, benefits, things like that. An equity share is an option, a small one. We call it sweat equity. Sometimes they'll get 5 or 10%. That's an ideal way to keep employees, but unfortunately you do have to give up some of your company for it. So,
well, we've talked about this before, you know, mm-hmm. when I've made it clear that for Chester's, for example, I thought, you know, can we make it into an employee owned company?
Yeah.
And we've talked about the pros and cons of that. So
that's tough to have a bunch of employees own it. Employee owned companies are awesome and they can be beneficial. But the problem is that if you have a large workforce, even more than 5, and people come and they leave and they go and they quit, you know, it's a real hassle trying to keep that up. So really just rewarding your early employees or your key employees, I think, is the ticket. And one thing on this, I have actual personal experience with this. If you start a business, like if you invest in a business or you start a business with a partner who is key to making everything function, you really need to get what's called a key man insurance policy. I had a partner pass away, unfortunately, right as we got a business going, and it was almost impossible to keep going. If I would have had the key man insurance policy, I would have been able to recoup my losses and just been done with it. But without him, the business faltered and failed very quickly.
Yeah, so you hear stories like that all the time.
It does happen. It does happen. Yeah. If I got hit by a bus tomorrow, there'd be a lot of businesses who are struggling with their accounting. So it's good to have some type of insurance, some good backup plans if those key employees leave or quit or whatever. So.
Do accountants ever make deals with each other in case something happens to take over each other's business?
You know, it's a fine idea. And I've actually attempted that a couple times to like work with other accountants to help out. But everybody's kind of out for themselves.
You know? Real territorial.
Yeah, it's tough. You don't want people stealing clients and that kind of stuff. So,
well, I would just think it would be kind of an emergency situation.
It would be mutually beneficial. So if there's any bookkeepers near me that want to make a deal, I'm down.
Well, there you go, guys. That's a free idea from Turtlesmith. Yeah. There you go. Make mutually beneficial, you know, arrangements with your colleagues. I know, for example, that a guy that we're going to get in here at some point to interview, his name is Aaron Glenn. He's nicknamed Surf. I don't know why, but he basically has a business that does storm shelters.
Oh yeah,
and safe rooms. And
big he's business got, in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and he's got a system that he created to do this that makes them stronger than anything else. So, you know, a little plug there. But the thing that I want to mention though is that he is very generous with people. He's had a couple of his employees go off and start businesses. Some of them have even, you know, advertised against him, you know, basically stolen jobs out from under him, you know, by underbidding him. And despite that, he helps them out of jams, you know, because they'll get themselves into situations where they can't complete a job, you know, because of their inexperience or their inability to get workers. And he has stepped in many times to help them, you know, and so that kind of mentality, you know, I call it the abundance mentality, and that's not from me. That's from Stephen Covey from the Seven Habits of Highly Successful People.
Yep.
But the abundance mentality basically posits that there really is enough business for everyone out there.
Mostly, yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, that can't always be true. But in his case, he just feels like I could be a jerk and let them falter and really let them go out of business. But then I know that his family and his kids will suffer. So it doesn't really hurt me to help him. And then maybe next time he'll be a little bit nicer about, you know, not underbidding me so severely on jobs.
It's a great thing. It really is. And I'm in full agreement with that. Some of your employees, if you are successful and have a longstanding business, eventually somebody's going to leave, start a competitive business. And I agree with that mentality. I think the best thing that you can do is just wish them well and be happy to help them on their journey. You know, one of my very first bosses and kind of early mentors is a guy named Leon Hicks. He's great. He told me when I first started working there, he goes, I know that you're not going to stay with me for 5 or 10 years. You know, this is a short-term gig, couple years for you, and then you're going to move on to bigger and better things. So he just asked me very nicely, you know, just try to help me out when we're transitioning, you know, and if I need some help later on after you're gone, please be there for us. And, you know, don't screw me over. And I said, no problem. And to this day, I still talk to him and help him out when he needs it. So that kind of boss mentality of nurturing your employees and hoping that they go on to bigger and better things, I think is great.
I've actually seen it a couple times where the original company that a person works for, they will actually invest in employees and set them up in business.
Yep.
Maybe not directly, you know, in competing in the same area, but they'll say, yeah, you want to go a town over and, you know, we'll get you going. We'll get you the truck. We'll, you know, they already know you're a good plumber. So we'll set you up. We'll invest in it. We'll take a little piece of what you're doing. And I that's think that's a good way too.
That's exactly what we talked about with a little bit of an equity share. You know, instead of giving them a piece of their main company, they just started another one, but that they now get to be partners in. So they get to benefit from that competition. So I think that's a great thing for key employees.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just a, what do they call it? A virtuous circle.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I want to talk about in regards to employment is just being realistic in your expectations. I find that a lot of bosses think that their employees should work as hard as them and they should really, you know, bust ass every single day and stress about the business as much as they do. And that's never going to happen. It's just, it's not a realistic expectation. Your employees don't care about your business as much as you do. And that's okay.
Yeah. I had that expectation for, you know, a very short time.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought that, they would see the value in what I'm doing and they're going to care about it as much as me. And, you know, sometimes employees will come in and they'll be a little bit idealistic and they will, you know, indicate that they do care like that, but really it fades because they're not, they don't own it. You know, they're not seeing the fruit of the labor in the sense that, they feel an ownership stake in the business.
Right.
That said, there are employees that work and act like owners, you know, and they are the unicorn. So if you get a hold of one of them,
don't let them go.
Do everything on this list to keep them.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, most people don't do that. I actually had back in, you know, 25 years ago or so when with my first company, I had another company approach me and they told me their pitch to me was, sell us the cases at wholesale. And we will do the shows. We will represent ourselves as you, and you will never have to worry about, you know, the long hours of a show or all the hassle of it and everything. We'll do it for you. And I thought to myself, I said, this person will never sell this case or represent this case with the same amount of love that I will, because he didn't build it. He didn't,
right.
He doesn't know what went into it. He didn't sleep on the leather, you know? And it's just like, it's an almost impossibility to feel that reverence for the product if you're coming in afterward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, be careful of people who pretend like they care about your product just to get a piece of your product, is what I would say on that, you know? So that's something you'll see a lot of. You'll see employees come in. You'll see people come in. I'm just referencing myself. I see people come in. And before you and I, you know, got together and we started actually looking at resumes and kind of, you know, evaluating that, I was really, really guilty of just, you know, taking every warm body that came in and gave me a hug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anybody that just said, oh, I love what you're doing. I love your product. Great. You're hired. You know, and that is absolutely the worst way to do it.
Well, you want to find people that are passionate about what you're doing, because then it makes working with them a little bit easier. But at no point will anybody that you hire, except for maybe Lulu, you know, if you have a wife that works with you, but at no point will anyone care about it as much as you. And that's just the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't say that it will never happen, but it's very rare.
Okay.
Fair enough. Right. And when it does happen, though, there's a flip side, right, where we talk about key employees, right? Mm-hmm. They make themselves into a key employee because they care so much.
Uh-huh.
And then if they are not taken care of, there comes a point where the owner makes a decision or says something offhand or whatever that lets them know that they are just an employee. And that can be very hurtful for them, you know, so that can sour the relationship. So you got to be very careful of that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, employee kind of morale is one of the things I wanted to talk about. It's so important that your employees come to work and they're happy and they're excited to be there. You know, like I said, they're never going to be as passionate as you, but they can be happy to be there and have a good working environment. And so you really want to try to set that up. Do not be... I like to say that there's a difference between a boss and a leader. You really want to be a leader. You want to be somebody who's working right next to your employees. You know, you're the first one to show up, the last one to leave, and you're really putting in all of the effort, leading by example. if you are trying to show up late, you know, and messing around and you don't really want to work as hard as even your employees, or you're expecting them to do all of the work for you, it's just a recipe for disaster. So don't be a jerk boss who that your employees hate. You know, within reason, try to
show up late if I bring ice cream.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. But again, you also don't want to be taken advantage of, like you talked about before, you know. So people are quick to take advantage if you're too nice. They see it as weakness. So it's important to kind of walk that fine line.
So Ben Franklin wrote a book, and he often used Poor Richard's Almanac. So Poor Richard as a kind of an author.
Mm-hmm.
To things. So he wrote a book called The Way to Wealth. It's a very small book. It's only like 20 pages. But one of the things he says in that book is he says, you know, that, in this, he used the terms master and servant, you know, so I don't know if he meant, you know, I think he meant servant in terms of indentured servitude.
Yeah.
Cause it was in Philadelphia, but basically what he said was, you know, is that a master that takes his eye off of what his servant is doing deserves, you know, the negative consequences that come with that. You know, I was wanting to quote it, but I kind of forgot the exact quote. But it was basically mind your business, you know, like if you're the master, and just as you said, if you're not paying attention, you know, then a lot of times employees will start taking advantage, you know, or they won't, or they may even be trying to do it right, but without instruction or without proper guidance and course correction, you know, they can take your business into a place that it doesn't need to be, even with good intentions. So.
Fair enough. Well, any further thoughts on employees or any questions on the forums? Everything will be available.
My thoughts are just, as I said, you know, when you're in business, it's really tempting to hire your friends. It's tempting to hire your acquaintances. It's tempting to hire your relationships, not your relationships with your relatives. So if you value those relationships, if you value those friendships, you know, then you need to be very, very strong and mindful of how you're coming across, so you don't destroy those relationships, because they can go pretty bad pretty quickly, because you, at least in my case, a lot of the times I didn't feel like I could be as critical as I needed to be. I didn't feel like I could be as corrective as I needed to be, because someone was my friend, you know, before I hired them.
I think a good rule of thumb is don't hire anyone that's going to be difficult to fire.
That's fair enough. That's a good adage right there. Says it very succinctly.
Yeah. It's hard to fire a friend and girlfriend. So anyway, well, that's the end of this segment.
Yeah, I have nothing else on that.
This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.